Today is January 17th, 2018, and this is episode number 445 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I have too much time on my hands to get the full story on anything we cover. That's like the biggest lie. That's the biggest lie of all time. That is the biggest lie of all time.
Brian, it's all about presentation. But continue.
To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. If you'd like to comment on a question, anything about the show, head over to facebook.com/groups/contextmachine.
That's pretty clever.
And drop a note.
Yeah.
/contextmachine. It's groups/contextmachine.
Awesome.
We'd like to have you over there. Matter of fact, I think we have a comment from a listener that we're going to talk about in the third segment.
Oh, sweet. I can't wait. It's to find out what it is.
Yeah, no, it's very exciting.
Yeah, I'm excited.
And now, Apple today, we're recording this on Wednesday.
Yes.
The 17th, already confessed.
By the way, yeah. I'm so glad to hear your voice, because we didn't get to talk last week, like not just with the show, but like pretty much at all.
That is mostly true. Yeah. And I didn't even record with a guest host because it was just too busy with all the CES stuff.
CES had us all very, very busy. So
yeah, I think normally I would have roped John Keaton, except for the fact that we did do an episode of Pop 1.0.
Yeah. And considering how busy CES week is, the fact that you're able to fit that in is pretty impressive.
Sure. Let's go with that.
Yeah. So anyhow, it's really nice to hear your voice.
Yeah. Likewise. Thanks. Good to have you back in the saddle, as it were.
Yeah.
Good.
Back
good
in
times.
The saddle again.
Held by all. Good times.
Yeah.
Aren't had by all or something like that. So in the meanwhile, Apple put out this big, huge press release today.
They did. And as you noted, when we were talking before the show, the whole thing is just packed with information and there's no fluff.
There's no fluff. There's also not a lot of details. And I think that the most interesting aspect of it is what was not said. And even perhaps what it is that Apple may be wanting us to think they said.
Well, okay. Should we start with what we know they said and then expand out from there?
Let us do that before I mention how much it must chap Tim Cook's hide to even vaguely appear to be giving, saying anything that could be used by President Trump to as some kind of, you know, accomplishment of his own. Because I won't say that yet.
Okay. I can't wait till you say it, and then I'll be like, oh, wow, you said that.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So what did Apple announce? They are increasing advanced manufacturing fund from $1 billion to $5 billion.
Right. That was one specific and specific announcement. Now, I always thought that Apple would probably increase that.
Yeah. I'm not surprised with that at all.
I mean, that $1 billion, that was like a starter fund.
Yeah. That was their test money.
That was their play money.
Yeah.
That's what that was. That was their play money. So yeah, they're increasing that to $5 billion. And so that was a specific concrete announcement that Apple made as part of this broader announcement about, as a matter of fact, so we'll make that number two. Apple said it was going to be contributing $350 billion over the next 5 years to the U.S. economy.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that, of course, being the $5 billion, the increase from $1 billion to $5 billion for its advanced manufacturing fund.
Right. Another part of that will be the new campus they're going to build, even as the dust is settling on the spaceship campus.
Yeah. However, see, this is one of those things that I think that Apple wants us to see it as one way. But in reality, it's not. I am confident that those plans have been under works for years.
That wouldn't surprise me at all, because this isn't the sort of thing where just on a whim you say, guys, let's build a new campus.
Which Apple could do if it wanted, but Apple,
but that's Apple not how does, Apple does things.
It's not how Apple does things. That's right. And Apple said that it was going to announce the location of this campus later this year, Austin. And well, because they said that it's going to be used in part to house Apple support people. And right currently, and
that's what Austin does right now.
Yeah, that's not. All, I mean, like all of Apple support isn't in Austin, and it's possible that Apple's going to expand elsewhere. I think Apple has a facility in Arizona that I know of for Apple Care. I don't know off the top of my head. I don't know where else Apple Care people are, but I would not at all be surprised if Apple wanted to expand its presence in Austin. But anyway, the point is that Apple said it would announce where it was going to do this later this year. Anything that Apple is going to announce in terms of a major new campus sometime over the next, you know, 1 to 11 months is not something that Apple just started.
That's a really good point. So do you think that Apple changed their financing plans? Because if they've been planning this for a while, they may have been planning on doing it by raising debt, or at least raising debt more than they will now. And now they're going to use some of the money that they'll be bringing into the United States.
We're kind of jumping the gun a little bit.
Did I just do a spoiler?
Kind of. I mean, let's just talk about this then, since we're getting there.
Okay.
Apple could already do anything and everything that it wanted to do. Right? U.S. corporations have never been more profitable. Mm-hmm. U.S. corporations did not need a tax cut to do anything they wanted to do. All of the money that the U.S. corporations needed, they either already had or could already borrow. And that is especially true for Apple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Apple could pretty much just print money and everyone would be okay with it.
Right, and Apple essentially has been doing just that by borrowing money when it had all this money overseas. Now Apple doesn't have to borrow that money, 'cause there's so many aspects of this. Apple didn't say this in its announcement, but okay, what it did say is that Apple is paying a $38 billion one-time tax to repatriate money, roughly $245, $250 billion from overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And that number, $38 billion, is a new specific. Okay, but what Apple didn't say in this announcement, but has already told us in the past, it has already accounted for at least $36 billion, mm-hmm. and probably more than that. This is the last time we heard about it was $36 billion, but Apple has made more money since then. And so what I mean by this is that when Apple would accumulate this money overseas, it would set aside money that it did not count as profits, but still held to pay for the tax obligation that it thought it would owe on that money.
So there's a tax payment slush fund for Apple sitting somewhere that's right. Been accruing interest because it's in a bank account.
Right. Right. It's extraordinarily low interest because that's how Apple tends to deal with most of its cash holdings. It's not like an investment fund.
Sure.
Right. Apple tends to treat most of its money in as conservative a way as it possibly can. And that most likely applies fourfold to money set aside to pay taxes.
Mm-hmm.
But this money had already been accounted for. It was, you know, it's already baked into the books. So this isn't like a new $38 billion. And Wall Street understands this, mind you, but this isn't some new $38 billion. Apple is essentially paying the money that it already set aside to pay the U.S. government. Now the law requires Apple to pay it now. Mm-hmm. So Apple is paying it now instead of holding on to it.
And how convenient. The money's just been sitting there waiting for this day. So it's not like they have to go scrambling through the lounge and shake down couches.
Right. And that's because Apple is smart and Apple plans for these things. You know, Apple has long known that, so Apple has always known that tax was due on this money being held overseas. Mm-hmm. The tax was always due on this money being held overseas. That's something that Apple's critics don't understand or willfully ignore. Actually, I'm assuming most of the time they don't understand it. All the money that Apple was holding overseas was always Apple always owed tax on it. It was the only issue was when Apple had to pay that tax. Mm-hmm. And the way the law was structured before, Apple had to pay that tax when it brought that money back. If it did not bring that money back, it didn't have to pay the tax. It still owed the taxes, but didn't have to pay the taxes. Mm-hmm. This is the case for U.S. corporations, multinational corporations. This has always been the case. The new law signed, the new GOP tax bill signed into law by Trump, says that, you got to pay that money. Doesn't matter if you bring it back, you got to pay it. So Apple is paying it, and the money that was already sitting overseas, they got this one-time sweetheart deal of 15.5% on tax, and I think it's 8% on profits relating to, I think, real estate. I'm not exactly sure how that works. And so this is where the $38 billion is coming from. But basically, Apple was planning on having to pay roughly 15% on all this money. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, that's what happened.
How about that?
So Apple also claimed, by the way, that this is probably a record, this $38 billion.
It wouldn't surprise me.
I would be shocked if it was not a record. I'm surprised Apple just didn't say. Well, Apple referenced it twice. The first time they said it's likely a record, and then later they referred to the record tax payment. So they're kind of having their cake and eating it too.
Yeah. Well, when you're making a $38 billion tax payment, you can probably get away with having your cake and eating it too.
Yes. All right. So what do we have? We have $38 billion that they're paying. We've got this increased manufacturing fund. But the point is that Apple could already do all of these things, and it could always do all of these things. And, you know, just to be blunt, the idea that U.S. corporations needed a tax break to goose the economy was always, frankly, a lie. This is one of those times when politics and technology are intersecting here. That was always a lie. The U.S. corporation was at record highs coming into 2017. And those record highs continued through 2017, and U.S. corporations had all the money they need. And these tax breaks that these companies are getting, and these repatriation fees benefits that these companies are getting, it's all going to go into shareholders like it always does every time we do this. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be used to hire people. It's not going to be used to build stuff, because companies could already build everything they needed to build. They could already hire anybody they needed to hire. They could already do anything they needed to do.
So do you feel like the press release Apple issued is kind of just a public image posturing thing?
Largely, and that's where I was saying that it probably chapped Tim Cook's hide to have to make an announcement that will no doubt be greeted by President Trump as some kind of accomplishment of his and some kind of result of the tax bill. It's not like I talked to Tim about this, but I don't know, does that not seem reasonable to you? Chaps aside, I bet it chaps aside.
I bet it does. It sure feels like Tim Cook is not pleased with the overall political situation in the United States right now.
No, but he is pleased with the cut in corporate taxes.
Well, sure, that's something
he has said exactly, because he has a fiduciary responsibility to shareholders to do just that. So from, I mean, you know, U.S. corporations in general are very pleased with these results, because now it means they get to make more money, because, you know, they didn't already have all the money in the world. So
that's lucky.
It gets a little more interesting to that, because Apple is saying in this press release that it's committing $350 billion to the U.S. economy. And it really didn't tell us exactly where that money was coming from, but I'm reading between the lines, and I don't even really think it's all that much between the lines. To me, I believe that, let me pull up this bit, because there were two interesting little quotes from this.
Okay.
And I'm stalling for time while I pulled this up. One paragraph said, and these were like back-to-back paragraphs with a graphic in between them. One paragraph says, combining new investments and Apple's current pace of spending with domestic suppliers and manufacturers, an estimated $55 billion for 2018, Apple's direct contribution to the U.S. economy will be more than $350 billion over the next 5 years, not including Apple's ongoing tax payments, the tax revenues generated from employees' wages, and the sale of Apple products, which I don't know why they wouldn't count that. That's one thing. The very next paragraph says, planned capital expenditures in the U.S., investments in American manufacturing over 5 years, and a record tax payment upon repatriation of overseas profits will account for approximately $75 billion of Apple's direct contribution. Right. Okay. It's like they're counting the $38 billion towards the $350 billion, but they're not counting the money that they were already paying and will continue to pay in other taxes towards that $350 billion.
Is that maybe a thing because they're paranoid about competitors using those numbers to try and figure out exact sales figures?
No, okay. because Apple's bottom line sales figures are available to anyone and everyone. The thing that Apple tries to hide is exactly where those specific profits are coming from.
Yeah,
right. The bottom line isn't hidden. So here is what I take from that. Apple already expected to contribute roughly $275 billion to the U.S. economy over the next 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And of the $75 billion, $36 billion of it was already paid for. Actually, probably all $38 billion, but whatever. Let's call it 36 because that was the last number that I heard from Tim Cook saying that they had already accounted for, right? So what does that leave? That leaves $39 billion in additional investments over the next 5 years.
Which isn't
that much money.
Much.
It is. Oh, okay. It's a crap ton, right?
Yes.
I don't think we're trying to minimize just how much money Apple is talking about.
I guess
here.
It's like saying our sun is a small star.
Nice. I like that. But it's certainly not that much as a percentage of the money being repatriated. And it's not a big increase. It's actually a very small increase. We're talking about like $10 billion a year, less than $10 billion, $8 billion a year over the next 5 years that Apple is talking about increasing what it's doing in addition to this one-time tax that it had to pay. So where's the rest of that money going to go? And I'll tell you where the rest of that money's going to go. But you knew that was coming, huh?
Wait, hold on. Let me play straight, man. Brian, what do you mean? Where will the rest of that money go?
Maybe paying off some of the debt that Apple already borrowed to give to shareholders. Maybe they may not pay the debt. They may choose to just keep paying that because their interest rates are so ridiculously low.
Mm-hmm.
They may just continue to hold that debt and pay it off. I don't know. And Apple hasn't said dividends and stock buybacks. That's where it's going to go.
I would be surprised if that wasn't the case.
It's where it always goes. You know how like AT&T announced $1,000 bonus to employees?
The $1,000 bonus they were already planning on giving them.
Yeah, right. But they made it sort of seem like you know, this was a result of the tax bill.
Yeah. Also, the same employees that are getting laid off, and the $1,000 was probably kind of a thing just to give them a little cash out the door.
Yeah, maybe. But the point is that like any money that AT&T is saving on this tax bill is going to go to shareholders. It's not going to employees. It's not going to build stuff. You know, Walmart gave a bonus to employees and then laid off a bunch of employees too. But you know, whatevs. And those small little bonuses are pittances. And Apple has not made that sort of announcement. By the way, Apple has not said that every employee is going to get a little something. Apple could, but Apple has not.
I don't see them doing that either.
But Apple could have already done that too. That's my whole point. My point is that U.S. corporations did not need more money to make investments, and they're not going to use the money that they're saving and getting to make those investments. They're going to give it to shareholders, which is, you know, fine, I guess. Just it just chaps my hide the rhetoric coming out from the right in particular that tax cuts were needed to goose the economy is a fabrication. It's a complete fabrication. This money's going to go to shareholders, going to go to the wealthy. It's a little bit of it'll go to me because I own a very tiny position.
Yeah, I was just about to ask how long before you're rolling in the dough, Mr.
I could be rolling in
with your
I could be rolling in tens of dollars.
You could be.
Tens of dollars, I'm telling you, depending on how big the dividend increase.
A big spender.
Yeah, and if you're talking about the next 5 years, it could be scores of dollars.
Man, you could buy, like, more coffee drinks.
I could. Maybe. Depends on what inflation does.
Yeah, and
especially if the minimum wage. Yeah, and how big a drink I want. Especially if the minimum wage goes up. So maybe a couple of coffees.
Well, still, that's better than none at all.
Indeed. All right. So none of this, by the way, I'm not bagging on Apple here. As a matter of fact, I think this press release was a masterful announcement. But I also think there were some specific interesting tidbits. The $5 billion increase, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. The new campus, that's certainly interesting. Mm-hmm. The $38 billion that Apple is paying in taxes. Interesting. Mm-hmm. And the total, you know, Apple's total contribution to the economy is sort of interesting. But I think that what they didn't say is even more interesting. And that what they didn't say is that they're not really increasing by a whole lot. The increase that they have planned for investments and whatnot is not that much bigger.
So what I'm visualizing is a meeting with Apple executives and the whole PR team and legal team as they're crafting this. And they're saying, okay, look, so we are being totally truthful with what we're saying. And everyone looks around the table and they're like, yes. But if people choose to read into this more than we're writing, then hey, who are we to say, huh?
Yeah, I'm not bagging on Apple here. Mm-hmm. I'm not bagging on Apple at all. I mean, these numbers are huge. I mean, Apple is the biggest U.S. taxpayer, period, and it has been for years because it makes so much freaking money. Mm-hmm. And this money, you know, $38 billion being made in you know, some kind of one-time lump payment is just, that's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. But, you know, the increase in investing in U.S. manufacturing, I think that's significant. But I also think I would hazard, I don't know this for a fact to be sure, but I would hazard that Apple was planning on increasing this fund from $1 billion to $5 billion all along anyway. It was probably already baked into the books.
Be surprised if that was not the case. I mean, when they announced it, what is it, spring of 2017, and it was like $1 billion. Okay, $1 billion is a crap ton of money. But at the same time, it felt like a pretty small amount for Apple to toss at this. So it felt to me like that was their test money. You know, like when you and I send each other a dollar on Apple Pay Cash to see if it works, that's what Apple was doing with this.
Hey, man, I made sure to send that right back to you.
You know, we boosted the economy. We shared a dollar.
We shared a dollar.
Let's do a press release.
We should do a press release for that for sure. It's also kind of like Apple's investment in video, right? It started off with $1 billion. That's going to increase.
Of course it is.
Just like it did with Amazon. Amazon started off with roughly $1 billion too.
I think that's what Netflix did as well.
Yeah. It's a good starting point. You know, it's like, there's no point like, okay, here's $5 billion. Go spend it. That's ridiculous. You're not going to be making good choices there. I think this manufacturing, it's probably not that much different, Jeff, because shows cost, you know, a couple $100 million to buy these days, right? Mm-hmm. $100 million, $200 million to buy a full season of a show. And, you know, I think a lot of manufacturing initiatives are going to be in that same price. But Apple started off with $1 billion. They made some bets, and they made some smart investments, both. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine that the way that this went internally was, let's start with $1 billion and see how that goes. But let's, you know, if it goes well, this is where we plan to take it. And if it doesn't go well, we'll reevaluate.
That seems like a totally plausible scenario.
Now, John Keith's going to be mad that I'm spoiling this, because he's probably going to want to talk about it on Pop.0. Yes.
No, I was just going to say that it's okay to get John riled up. John, I love you, but man, it is fun to watch your buttons get pushed.
It is true. So here's what he said.
Your job is to entertain me.
It is, absolutely. And I feel like I'm pretty good at that job.
Yes. Thank you.
He argued in one of our little chat groups, one of his little chat groups, I should say. He said that Apple is single-handedly trying to create a Chinese economy in the U.S., meaning rather than do it all themselves, as Steve would say, they are making a community of suppliers like in China. They are duplicating the Chinese model, to which I added, by the way, they even have a five-year plan to round up the workers. Because, you know, this is like being presented as a five-year plan. Mm-hmm. Do you know about the five-year plans?
Yep.
China and the Soviet Union, five-year plans?
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, so, yeah. Right. LOL.
Do we need a Wikipedia link for everyone else?
I'm a nerd.
I can't.
He made me onto something.
Brian.
Yes?
I'm totally making a conspiracy theory for everyone right now. Dave, okay. He'll approve of this because he emotionally supports all conspiracy theories.
And don't get me started on that.
Okay, so we have Apple Pay Cash.
Yes.
We have Apple saying it's investing in these new facilities.
Are you thinking an Apple cryptocurrency?
I was thinking Apple Company Town.
An Apple Company Town.
With Apple money. But you see, they might be able to I'm totally making this up as I go. But I just love the idea of tossing that out there, because someone's going to find a nugget in there, and they're going to be like, and they're going to run with it. And you run, little friend, run with that.
Some of our forefathers fought and died to get rid of company towns.
Oh yeah.
I can't imagine
died. And it's
so that they could be reborn in China.
Yeah. Yeah. There are parts of the Colorado state constitution that are in place because of what amounted to wars over company towns.
Sure.
Yeah. Oh, good times.
Well, good times, right? So no, I don't think so, but I do think that Apple, I mean, we've said this before. Apple doesn't move manufacturing back to the U.S. on a grand scale until and if the day that it is essentially entirely automated.
Yes, I am totally with you on that.
And the reason is not expense, right? The amount of money that Apple spends on labor in China is small, but you know, remember that Apple is paying in China better than essentially everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the expense, and this is Steve Jobs made this clear. The issue is being able to round up a workforce that is flexible enough to work on the cyclical scales, the cycles that Apple needs. Scales. I don't know what
you really, you really wanted to say cyclical cycles, didn't you?
I did. I will iron my hands later.
That's okay. I was on the edge of my seat, leaning into the microphone to jump on it. And then you fixed yourself and it was like,
yeah, sorry about that. But the, you know, being able to have a workforce, to marshal a workforce of several hundred thousand people to ramp up production of a new product and then be able to dial that back 6 months later, you can't do that in the U.S.
No,
we don't have the density.
Nope, we don't have the infrastructure,
and we don't have a willingness for people to work on those kinds of you know, frankly, nonsense schedules.
I was going to say we don't have the culture, but yeah, there you go.
Right. I mean, again, some of our forefathers fought and died more than 100 years ago to make these things not part of the U.S. culture.
And I appreciate that.
I personally appreciate that very much. But in China, it's differently. As a matter of fact, there were some aspects of Chinese culture that fit itself well to that. First of all, you do have the population density,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, I think I've been listening to two different stories about Chinese population density and city populations from two completely different perspectives. Do you want to hear about this?
Yeah, tell me.
So one was, and I didn't catch his name, it was, I think it was the Commonwealth Club. It was Commonwealth Club interview on NPR with a guy who a scholar who wrote a book about China and who took great pride in basically saying that popular conventional wisdom is entirely wrong about China. And one of those, for instance, like debt isn't a problem in China like it is in other places because of this reason, despite conventional wisdom, and that corruption actually is part of the Chinese growth engine instead of an inhibitor. He explained why, and actually made a really good argument for that. But when it came to density, he said that conventional wisdom says that Chinese cities are too dense, and that the Chinese government itself wants its cities to become less populous and has enacted policies to essentially force people to move to smaller cities throughout the country. And he says that they've got it exactly backwards, because increasing density and also increasing infrastructure to support that density will reduce traffic and pollution.
Interesting. Okay.
So he may or may not be right about that. I don't know. Second story I listened to was on Marketplace, it's American Public AP, it's API now. It's not American Public Radio anymore. What's the public radio corporation that does Marketplace? Do you listen to that one?
Every now and then, and the acronyms roll past and I never pay attention to them anymore.
American Public, whatever.
It's okay. Know. We have listeners shouting at the air right now to let us know. So thank you to every one of you.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we appreciate that. So anyway, their story was about Shanghai planning on capping, or no, Beijing wanting to cap Shanghai's population.
Oh, that's interesting.
And that cap is essentially not much higher than what it is right now, and that doesn't make much sense. So anyway, the point is, it's like 35 million people live in Shanghai. right? Mm-hmm. And Beijing has got, I don't know, 25 million or something like that. And that the kinds of densities that China has in its cities lend itself to these incredibly large workforces. And then you've got the sort of almost migratory patterns of some of these workers. So workers would go from the small towns. They would go to the big cities. They would get a manufacturing job. They would work for 6 months, and then they go back home.
Right. And in that 6 months, they've earned more than enough money for their family to survive for a year.
Right. And that would work well for Apple's cyclical process.
Uh-huh.
because they would go in, they would get hired, they would work in these ramp ups, they would, you know, meet the Christmas rush, and then they'd end up going back home once their contracts actually worked out. And again, here in the States, people don't want to work for 6 months. They want to work. They want to have a job. They want to have a career.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reason why these manufacturing jobs are gone. Steve Jobs explained this years and years and years ago, and it remains just as true as it is then. Today as it was then, and the bottom line, to come back and bring everything full circle, is that Apple doesn't bring the ability to manufacture massive quantities of devices to the U.S. until and enough it can all be done by robots. Not because they're evil, not because they hate people, not because they don't want workers, not because they don't want to pay American wages.
It's because that's the only way they can get the workforce they need.
Right. Like, you couldn't build, I mean, like, this, so, you know, Foxconn's building this plant in Wisconsin, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, which could theoretically actually have, do we know what they're building with that plant? It's not Apple devices, right?
No, there's nothing Apple that's being made there.
We haven't heard anything about Apple stuff being made there, but do we know what is being made there?
Yeah, we have an idea, and I'm sorry off the top of my head, I don't remember now.
But it's... Okay, so we know what it is, and we know that it's not Apple.
Yes, that's what we know.
Right. Okay, so what we have found out since then, first of all, is that the incentives being given to Foxconn are probably going to end up costing the government there like twice as much as they were planning, and they're having to bring in workers from neighboring states to try to staff the place. It's exactly a product of what we're talking about. Foxconn, the manufacturing king of the world, is building a massive facility inside the United States, and they can't hire enough people to work there.
Yeah, how about that?
How about that?
LCD screens. That's what it's making. I thought it had something to do with televisions, so there we go. LCD screens.
Right. So, manufacturing. So what Apple is doing is it is fostering the manufacturing of components in the US. And that's it's Apple is paying for, is investing in the development of very highly technical and advanced, what's, you know, it's called the Advanced Manufacturing Fund for a reason. Mm-hmm. And what's the example that they included?
One of them that they included was the company that's making the special laser systems that they use for location sensing in AirPods and the iPhone X. And I just totally forgot the name of the company, but hold on. I always have notes handy. So that would be, well, now that I say that, I can't find it. Starts with an F. Anyhow.
Oh, the name of the company?
Finisar. Finisar. That's it.
Yeah, that's it. Finisar.
Yeah.
So, I feel like how I said that, like I knew.
Yeah. That was awesome.
I didn't. I still didn't remember it even after you said it. Just, you know.
Yeah, but it was great how you were like, yes, that's
yeah, totally the one. That's the one, dude. Yeah, we found it together.
Woo, go us. I could have said, Laserfly, and you would have been, yeah,
totally Laserfly. That's I love that company. Yeah. Laserfly. reach around.
I see what you did there.
Did you watch that show yet?
No, I haven't had time, but I,
oh, man.
I really want to watch it. Well, it's on Hulu, so it's a problem.
And you don't have that?
No.
Okay, well, don't tell anybody, but I'll give you my login later.
Okay, my lips are sealed.
Okay, good. As long as we keep that between us.
Okay. Well, no one's going to know.
Yeah, no one's going to know.
I mean, it's between you and me and, what, five people?
Yeah, no, we have thousands of people for some reason choose to listen to the show.
Yes. However, sometimes the self-deprecation about the show makes people laugh.
It's true.
Yeah.
So, where the hell are we? Finisar, they're making the laser stuff. We know that Apple has made several investments on manufacturing fund.
Yeah.
And
Finisar, they did a $350 million investment in December in Finisar.
Yeah.
Yep.
Again, you like how I said that as if I knew?
Yeah.
Because I've forgotten all of these details.
Do you want to agree with me on the about $200 million investment in Corning last spring?
Maybe. You know, which is interesting. You know, Corning probably didn't need that money. Corning does well.
Yeah, but if Apple invests $200 million so that you can make a new factory that's going to favor Apple products.
Oh yeah, of course. Oh, yeah. Corning is absolutely going to do that. And I mean, and this is part of Apple's entire strategy of Apple makes these same kinds of investments in China. And that's what John Keith is talking about. Apple is, but I don't, John is arguing. And again, I'm A, stealing his thunder, and B, arguing about his arguments when he's not here to argue them. Himself, but John is arguing that Apple is recreating China, and I don't think that that's the case. I think that what Apple is doing is it's working not on reproducing its infrastructure that it has in China. Instead, I think that Apple is building new infrastructure here in the States, using the same model that it is used in China, where it invests in local companies, local specialists that can do the things that it needs done, and invest not only it helps invent processes, it buys the machinery that is needed to make the stuff. It sometimes pays for the facilities where the stuff is made, but it relies on the local companies to actually do the making. Mm-hmm. So it's using the same strategy, but I don't think that Apple is reproducing its entire manufacturing chain.
Yeah, it looks like what they're trying to do is replace a segment of their manufacturing chain.
I would argue, Jeff, that Apple is trying to build new segments.
Ooh,
With new advanced things that it hasn't been able to do before. Face ID and Finisar and its laser stuff is one example of that, right? It's Apple didn't replace an existing laser facial recognition thing.
That's true. That was a totally new thing for them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's what Apple is going to be doing here in the US. And, maybe eventually it will actually turn into Apple being able to use robots to manufacture more stuff in the U.S. Maybe.
I think that's very possible. Not guaranteed, right, but very possible.
All right. So that's Apple's big announcement today. Interesting stuff, I think.
Yeah. Very interesting. And I love that you're able to read between the lines and pick out the rest of the message.
Why, thank you, Jeff. I appreciate that immensely. All right, topic number two is a question.
Okay.
So I'm just going to read that question.
Okay.
Hey, Jeff, are we a bunch of hypocrites? You and me?
Technically, no, we would be a pair of hypocrites.
I respect your pedantry, sir.
Thank you. I learned it from watching you, man.
You're welcome. All right. So what we're talking about here is, and this is a conversation that's stemming out of Tuesday's daily observations.
Mm-hmm.
And where, you know, I've been particularly complaining about Apple's, you know, HomeKit strategy, especially Apple's, seeming inability to understand that I want to talk to my house instead of to my wrist or into my phone.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, and so like part of our criticism about Apple on this is that Apple hasn't announced the strategy to compete with Alexa. And we're all pissy about it.
We're very pissy about it.
Okay, so here's my question.
Okay.
How is this any different than Wall Street bitching about Apple not having announced the strategy to compete with netbooks?
That's a really good question.
And us saying that Wall Street is ridiculous for criticizing Apple for not having a strategy that Apple hasn't even talked about. Like...
The
right. I mean, aren't we being, isn't this just the exact same thing? Cause I don't back off. I said at the time that Wall Street was being, that those few analysts who were like all pissy about Apple not having a strategy to compete with netbooks were missing the mark, and that, and eventually that Apple was saying that it going to compete with netbooks by introducing what I was calling an iPod Super Touch at the time that ended up being the iPad. Mm-hmm. And, you know, today it's LOL netbooks. The iPad killed netbooks.
And there's a bunch of people listening right now, more than a pair, that are going, look at education. But I know that's not the point of this conversation.
Chromebooks have killed netbooks too. Well, I mean, netbooks, and then Chromebooks have taken over education.
That's kind of funny how in my mind, Chromebook is the new netbook. You know, the cheap, crappy.
I would say that Chromebooks are higher quality than netbooks were.
No, you did not. But my brain.
No, I would say that they are.
But you didn't say that, and yet my brain conflated it, and always has. And but yes, you're right. Yeah. The netbook is not a thing anymore. It's now the Chromebook, and
right. So yeah. We're all pissy about Wall Street. You know, we're like high and mighty. Even I'm high. I'm for sure high and mighty about my condemnation of Wall Street dinging Apple for not having a netbook strategy.
And I'm openly concerned about Apple's current status. But yes, okay.
And yet here we are. I think I've been more of a jerk about it than you have. And that may be in part because you just simply embrace the alternative, which is Alexa, which I refuse to embrace.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. That makes sense.
Or Google Home.
It's
right.
It's so, less of a sting for me because I have an alternative that, while it's frustrating, it's working for me.
And you are in general less of a jerk than me.
Maybe I'm a quiet jerk.
So I do think that there's a difference in these two situations. And it finally gelled for me yesterday on TDO.
Okay. So what do you see as the difference? Because it might help me feel a little more comfortable about my vocal criticism of Apple in this space.
Well, the difference between Apple dealing with netbooks and Apple dealing with smart homes is that Apple had not announced any kind of product to deal with netbooks. As a matter of fact, Apple, Tim Cook in particular, and to a lesser extent, Steve, because this was near the end of Steve's life,
mm-hmm.
Steve Jobs. Tim Cook was always very careful to not denigrate the need, the consumer demand that was being met by netbooks and instead always denigrated the netbooks themselves. Mm-hmm. He never said people don't need netbooks. These are ridiculous products and they're cheap and no one's going to like them. What he would say is that we think that the netbooks are terrible and offer a poor experience and blah, blah, blah. And then would go essentially hint that, you know, you say things like, you know, people are already using the iPhone for what some people use netbooks for. Mm-hmm. That was my biggest clue that Apple was going to release what eventually became the iPad. And so Apple had that was what Apple was doing with netbooks. But for the smart home space, Apple has announced HomeKit and not done enough for it. And Apple has announced a device that allows you to speak to it that does compete. Oh, that's it. So Apple has announced a device that does compete with Alexa, mm-hmm. which is the HomePod. Mm-hmm. But it falls woefully short of doing the things that I want. And Apple has made no indication that it cares one iota about the idea that I want to speak to my house. As a matter of fact, Apple has said very specifically, we already have these devices on us, referring to Apple Watches and iPhones.
Right, which is, to me, fascinating.
Right, so it's what Apple has, it's what Apple hadn't announced for netbooks that mattered then, and it's what Apple has announced for smart homes and for speaking to our smart homes that is a factor here, and I think that doesn't make us hypocrites.
Okay, I'll go with that. And I've come up with a strategy that I think Apple should take in this space.
Okay.
And it's two-pronged. First, they need to open up voice commands on the HomePod to more than they've said it's going to support, which is basically the music streaming. You can do some basic messaging on it. You can like make notes, voice notes from it. And that's about it. Also, it has to be paired with an iPhone or an iPad. So what they need to do is open that up so that you have full voice control like you do on an iPhone or iPad. Break the link to those other devices.
To an iPhone. Yeah. And open it up to developers.
Yes. And then the
which may or may not already be in the works,
which could be. Yeah. So then the other side of this is that they need to change how they are presenting HomeKit to us. And what they need to do is say, instead of saying, hey, it's, you know, here's all the HomeKit stuff, what they need to do is rebrand so that all the smart home devices are labeled as made for Siri. Because people know Siri, but the HomeKit thing, I think it gets kind of lost on exactly what it is. So focus on the part that people really know. Made for Siri.
Made for Siri instead of made for iPod, iPhone.
Yeah.
I like that. Made for Siri. Oh, I like that. I like that. I like that a lot. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't think we're being hypocrites. It's the same kind of argument, but it's not at all.
Yeah. Okay. I'm with you. And not just because it makes my life more comfortable to say that. Uh-huh. The argument that you have presented seems plausible to me.
Yeah. Apple's decision to compete with Sonos instead of Alexa is the wrong decision.
And I agree with you. It feels like they're taking the fight to the wrong playground.
You know what Apple could do? Man, Apple could just be in this like beautiful, gorgeous position by competing with Sonos and Alexa. HomePod for Sonos, right? You know, there is a market. Sonos brings in like $1 billion a year.
Yeah,
which is peanuts to Apple, but it's money.
Yeah, yeah, they have a great business,
and Apple could have a device that competes against Sonos, but then it could have two devices that that serve that Alexa, or what is it, the Echo and the Dot niche too.
Mm-hmm.
And if they did that, they could crush this, because Amazon isn't likely. Well, Amazon could always, you know, do some kind of product that sounded better than Echo. But it, you know, whatever the point is that Apple could cover all ends of this market and allow us to listen to great music and also to control our homes with our voice.
I would love that.
You know, it doesn't. It's not just that the HomePod misses the mark. There's room for a you know, Apple would never call it this, but the iDot.
Oh yeah, no, that name is not coming. But yep,
that name's not coming. But but it instantaneously conveys what I mean, right?
Yep,
a listening device that is cheap.
Yeah,
the cheap enough to put room. The HomePod room. There you go. And then Apple could have, basically a hub-like device that wasn't designed to compete with Sonos, but was designed to be the Siri that we want for our homes. And then the HomePod sits on top to offer that same functionality and also sound great.
I like this plan.
And Apple could absolutely own the market for people who don't want to put wiretaps in their house and instead want devices that are geared towards their needs and their privacy.
There's a segment of the market that would jump all over a product like that.
And if Apple had done this, Apple could have charged $499 for the HomePod.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of at least $399. How much is it? It's $349, right? Or $299.
Oh, I thought it was $349.
$349, right? Yeah, Apple could have charged $399 for it if it had a for the exact same device, if it had a less audio focused device to sit below it, and then had that HomePod room, HomePod microphone or something. Yeah, iDot.
That just hurts.
Come on, man. I died. You know exactly what I'm saying, though.
I know exactly what you're saying, but it rubs me the wrong way, just like when people say that they have an iTouch.
Fair enough. Again, I respect your pedantry.
Thank you. Yeah. So,
all right. So anyway, there we go. We're not hypocrites. We rule.
Woo-hoo, go us. And we have like 2 minutes left.
Radio. So Quentin had a comment for us on Facebook. That would be, by the way, for those who are keeping score at home,
mm-hmm.
facebook.com/groups/contextmachine.
Hold on, writing that down. facebook.com/groups.
Yep.
/observations.
Context machine.
Yes. Context machine. Observations. That's the other show. That's the other thing. Show.
Yeah, it's that morning thing. Do you have a Facebook group for that you didn't tell me about?
No, I don't. But as I was doing Foley to make it seem like I was typing,
uh-huh.
It occurred to me, maybe I should.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. All right.
So,
well, anyhow,
what did Quentin have to say?
So here's what Quentin says. Possible top. We can skip that part. Although I have to say that he said that we have all this excellent CES coverage. So Quentin, thank you.
Thanks, man.
Because we all worked really hard because we had a lot of good information. So thanks. Okay. So here's what he says. The Here We Go Again ACM edition. macOS High Sierra's App Store system preferences can be unlocked with any password bug. This really, really, really is getting ridiculous now. Has every single person at Apple taken their eyes off the ball? It strikes me that Apple as a company has been plate spinning for a few years now. Too many projects on the go and too few qualified people to work on them. Too many things are being missed. And to use an English football, which is soccer for those of you playing at home or in the United States, an English football phrase, All of the mistakes are simple schoolboy errors. Apple has always been a lean operation, which can be a positive, but I think it's now catching up with them, and the plates are starting to tumble. And he goes on to list several examples of this. And since we're short on time, I'll just stop there, and we can respond. So what do you think, Brian?
I think that... I think he's right. I think these security things, there have been too many security things. Like, just what do you call it? Schoolboy mistakes?
Yeah, he called them schoolboy errors. I'm not going to tell you on the air what his wife said, because I don't want to have to edit.
Oh, fair enough. But it's great. I guess other people can read it.
Yeah,
on the Facebook.
Yes, if they go to the Facebook.
Which, by the way, the Puritan thing on language—it's like if we can't say it without having to put a mature label on the show or edit it out. But you can go read it on Facebook.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
Like, you know, it's like we can't quote our president right now.
Well,
same kind of thing, right? So anyway, the point is,
man, yeah, hold on, I have to go get a drink. And I'm not talking water.
The point is that too many, it disturbs me. And I do think we've talked about this a little bit before, but I think that Quentin is right. You know, this is a product of Apple having ambitions that outpace or outscale its lean operation. It's especially lean management.
Yeah, I think that their always run it like a startup mentality has led to I don't want to say cutting corners, but skipping things that are now biting them in the butt. Like if you're a startup and you're having to run really lean, you may not have enough people or any people to really go over your code for QA. And that may be what's happened here. Apple's running lean and they're expecting their developers to do their own QA. And that's bad. It's not to say the developers aren't competent, but you need fresh eyes. So maybe that's what's happening here.
I don't know if it's that. I mean, like Apple's, you know, run lean thing worked when the company had relatively few products and relatively few moonshots that it's working on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the real problem is that Apple has, under Tim Cook, has dramatically increased the number of, I don't know if Apple would call them moonshots. I don't even know if you could call them moonshots in the same way that, Google's X Labs or Alphabet's X Lab was working on moonshots, but you know, the non-invasive glucose monitoring, the cars, what's the third project? It's the third project that we know about.
Let's see their AR projects.
Oh yeah. The AR stuff. Thank you. Yeah. These projects are just so much bigger that I think that Apple needed to increase its A-team headcount and to make those things, to be able to do those things and then still keep its eye on the existing balls, the existing plates that are in the air, to use Quentin's extended metaphor.
You know, I think Apple's in an interesting place, growth place right now. And I think that's playing into the problem that they're having right now. And the thing is, Tim Cook, he's striking me as a big picture guy. And so he sees the revenue streams that they're getting from the product lines today. And I think he's looking at how that can be maximized long term, but he also knows that everything is temporary. And my guess is, on some level, he's looked at all this and said, okay, so we have all these products that are generating all this revenue right now, but we need to be ready for when they don't, because eventually it's going to happen.
Well, and more specifically, we need to actually plan on replacing that revenue ourselves.
Yeah. So,
you know, we need to be releasing the things that actually disrupt what we're already doing, which is exactly what Apple did so well for years and years and years.
Yeah. And Apple, it's like they've been stuck almost in a place where everything is not in a place where they have the next thing to replace whatever. It's just been kind of static, it seems, for a while. And I'm thinking maybe that Tim is seeing that and he's like, okay, it's going to hurt right now, but we have got to work seriously on finding the next thing. And we need more than one next thing. We need the next things.
Right. But Apple's existing product lines are important enough that it needs the people to also work on those things.
And that's the problem, because they...
It used to be that Apple would move its A team around, right? I mean, like, for instance, it was the same team that was doing iOS 10.
Mm-hmm.
And they would essentially, you know, they'd do one and then they'd do the other. And then at some point I would assume that that both of those teams expanded a little bit, but you still had the same people at the top overseeing, you know, both products. And I mean, I think that I think that the mistakes that we saw in 2016, the lack of new products, late 2015 and 2016, the lack of new products, mm-hmm. and what we're seeing now with the software security flaws that have been allowed to escape into the wild, I think that was just a little bit of Apple sort of, you know, fraying at the edges from running so tight and selling for so long.
Yeah,
I guess that's really the long and the short of it.
I think you are probably right. And what I'm hoping is that now that we've gotten through a lot of these other big distractions, you know, like making the Apple Park campus happen, because that looks like it was a huge resource drain as far as talent goes.
And yeah, on the design side.
Yes. And so what I'm hoping is that now that can shift back to where Apple gets more focused on product, and maybe what we've seen with the stuff that started coming out in 2017, maybe we're seeing that start to happen. I'm kind of hoping.
Well, I hope so, but these security flaws were also part of 2017.
Well, it's not like you flip a switch and everything is now back in focused product mode. It's a transition. And so maybe these big bugs that we've seen, these big security issues that we've seen, which shouldn't have happened. I'm not trying to dismiss those. Maybe those are a side effect of Apple was too slow with the transition. And then customers suffer for it.
Yeah, and if that's the case, then we're also in the process of that getting back on track too.
That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah,
because
that's what I'm hoping.
Yeah, these password issues. I mean, that's pretty serious.
There's some very, very serious security issues. Some of the worst security issues that we've ever come across after years and years and years of mocking Microsoft for its security problems and continuing to mock Android for its security problems. Apple sort of topped like everybody with the root password bug in particular.
Yeah.
Yeah. This one on the Mac App Store is a lot less severe. It's just, matter of fact, we probably wouldn't have cared all that much about it if it didn't come on the heels of the root password flaw.
Yeah.
And then Apple fixing the root password flaw and then reintroducing it. I mean, come on.
So yeah,
they fixed it and reintroduced it. What the frack was that about?
Well, what the frack that was about was it shows that they didn't have a good process in place, because the only reason it was reintroduced was because the software update that was already available for other things didn't get updated to or replaced to include this fix. So you'd apply the update and it would overwrite the fix. I mean, that's a stupid problem, and it's something that they should have taken into account.
Yeah, agreed.
Now, my guess is that problem will never happen again.
I don't know. I don't know about that. I don't know about that at all.
I don't know either. That's why I'm only guessing. But what I'm doing is giving Apple, in this very focused instance, the benefit of the doubt.
That when I usually love giving Apple the benefit of the doubt when it matches their track record. The problem is the track record on security right now is alarming, and I'm not sure that we've seen the worst of it.
I'm not talking about the security part. I'm talking about the QA part. So when Apple said that they are doing their own audit and they're looking at where these problems came in, and they're working to fix it, for the moment, I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt that that's what they are really doing. And they're going to come up with an internal process that minimizes the risk of similar types of problems occurring in the future. My guess is that Craig Federighi does not like looking like a fool. Even though he may be happy-go-lucky on stage, I'm betting that when he had the meeting about what is up with this password bug and what's up with the root bug, that it wasn't everyone just sitting around the table with their feet kicked back going, hey, so what's up?
Probably not.
Yeah. So anyhow, what I'm hoping is that we are in the correcting phase, and these big embarrassing security bugs are going to become a thing of the past, even though they're not yet.
Let's hope.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So, do you think we ran over long enough to get enough people's time?
Yes.
All right. Well, then in that case, hold on. I know exactly which button to push. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add a question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And I'm going to see if I can get the URL right. Or go to facebook.com/groups/context machine.
Mm.
Yeah. So, hey, thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer. Big Sticks fan.